You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Savage Arms. Now, Savage has recently introduced the 110 Ultralight. Savage has teamed up with Proof Research once again to craft a barrel specific for a purpose-driven firearm. At around 6 pounds, the 110 Ultralight is designed to combat elevation and the elements while maintaining the performance of a factory-blueprinted Savage 110 action. The carbon fiber wrapped stainless steel barrel and melanite skeletonized receiver minimize weight for success on any mountain hunt. Now, I could go on and on about all the good things about this firearm, but what you need to do is go to savagearms.com, check out the 110 Ultralight. They have it available for the 308 Win Mag, the 270 Win Mag, the 28 Nosler, the 28 Ackley Improved, the 30-06 Springfield, and so on and so on and so on. They got it for just about any cartridge. So what you need to do is go to savagearms.com. Check this rifle out. It's a badass rifle. Savagearms.com.
Welcome to the Land and Legacy Podcast. We're your hosts, Adam Keith.
And Matt Dye.
This is your number one resource for all things land.
If you're interested in conservation, habitat management, hunting strategy, and rural real estate, this is the podcast for you.
All right, welcome back, Land and Legacy Podcast.
Whew, here we are. Man, it's so, September, middle of September, really. And
what is
a
today?
Lot of states.
Fourth? Fifth?
I guess it's not quite so middle. I'm a week ahead. My mind's already shifted.
I think the podcast will drop on the 8th.
Yeah.
7th or 8th. So.
Regardless. Kentucky's open.
Kentucky's open, North Dakota,
Nebraska, Wyoming.
Yep. Several states opened up. And then this time next week, basically, Missouri will be getting ready to kick off. So
Maryland's open.
Jeez.
Here we are.
Yeah.
I mean, it is about as lively, full of anticipation, I think, across the country as you can get from a deer hunting standpoint. It's amazing.
Did you not to make an inappropriate joke or anything like that, but and not even try to tiptoe my way into this whole world of discussion and debate, but you know how many guys are so excited for hunting season to get here because it's like, we've been swimming through the coronavirus pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
We've been swimming through the shutdowns, and we've been swimming through restaurant closures and all that stuff. Now, ain't nobody stopping me from hunting.
No. And it's the perfect escape and getaway. And
I hope it's a good reminder of the prioritizing of life.
Sure.
And how nature has a way of healing and escaping everyday nonsense.
Well, that, and honestly, too, I hope I'm completely wrong, but I feel like there's probably going to be quite a bit of, I'll say, unrest probably come November.
Ugh.
In the Whitetail Woods is going to be a fantastic place to be able to get some clarity and have a clear mind and be able to decompress, I think, from some of that. But regardless, yes, it's a fantastic reminder to be able to get out and enjoy that time. Whether you're hunting or just taking the kids fishing, dove hunting, a lot of people are dove hunting right now. It's all a way to get outside and do what needs to get done.
For
clear the mind.
Sure. Clear the mechanism. Definitely exciting as we get ready to jump into it. Did you happen to see that? I think I sent it to you and Chad. It was like the guy sitting at the table. There was like this huge brawl. It was the meme.
Huge brawl.
Everything going on behind him.
Yep.
And it showed the guy just sitting there looking at his food, and it said food plots. It was like rioting, protesting, and fires and all this stuff. And he was like,
I got food plots. Food.
There's so many of our listeners that are like, oh, I'm just ready for deer season.
Just worn out by all the hoopla.
The stuff, yeah. Yeah.
But, so. No, I mean, that's definitely a general consensus. Before I guess, 1 week. And it's not a last hurrah because we got a couple other trips coming up to Texas and to Florida.
Arkansas,
yep. But tomorrow, head out on a trip to Virginia and Maryland for a good solid 4 or 5 days worth of work. And then, like, that's kind of like the, okay, as soon as I get back from that, it's like, boom, couple days, put the finishing touches on things, and see where it goes.
We've already written those reports. I'm kidding to those guys. We got the one coming up in Arkansas. I've already written the report. I just got to get
done.
There and send it. No, not the case. But, man, it's insane
pumped.
Right now. You know, one thing a lot of our listeners don't know, I guess a little bit differently about what we do, is we don't – you hear us plug our partners on the beginning and end of the podcast. And we don't have a ton of them, but we work with a lot of companies. So, like, there's certain categories of let's just say, products that we work with numerous of those companies. For instance, Redneck Blinds, we also Maverick Blinds. Those are the two main ones right now that we work with both of them, and we don't have a sponsorship from either one of them, but we sell as dealers. And right now it's been just crazy busy with shipping out blinds. And so that's just another thing that we have kind of going on behind the scenes, where it's like we're constantly, the last 2 weeks, been working on these orders, and it's just like, whew, hunting season's coming, because people are ordering trail cameras. That's another one you don't hear us plugging one company, because we work and we have relationships with multiple, and we use multiple. So therefore, we've always said we don't really want to be exclusive with anyone, because there's one trail camera company that we use a lot because we like the system, but that system doesn't work for some of the other applications that we want. So therefore, we have many other companies.
I feel like, honestly, if you were to boil us down or put us in a corner and say, I would just like to replace the term products with tools.
Yeah.
Because, they're products, of course, but essentially they're tools. And if you are if you're doing any type of labor or just work itself, a Cobalt hammer or a Home Depot hammer, it doesn't matter, will work. It's just like, what tools?
Hammer, the one
Craftsman or something. I don't know.
No, there's one that's stiletto. It's titanium, so it weighs like less than a pound.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, it's a good hammer.
At the end of the day, there's tools we like to use, but many of the times it's not like it's a brand thing. It's not a product brand that like we're necessarily married to.
Yeah.
But when you're utilizing tools, yes, it goes beyond a brand. It goes beyond just a simple one singular product.
Because at the end of it, it's not necessarily that one. There, you can make the argument for a lot of comparisons out there, but for us, the ones that we're really just not exclusive with anyone is like, it's kind of like Ford, Chevy, Dodge, Ram, whatever you want to compare all those. They're probably going to get you all down the road. It just depends on how you want to go in style. If you want to, whatever. I should have said Toyota in that, since I have a Toyota. Well, but you pretty much, like, with these companies, it's like, if you want vertical windows, you want it fiberglass, you want plastic, that's who you got.
Yeah.
And we'll help you there. And so that's a big thing going on right now, selling blinds, selling trail cameras, and just trying to get ready for deer season. And I can't believe we made it.
It's here.
We're sitting in a backyard once again, and you can hear the crickets singing, and you can hear many, many other bugs. But if we were here, sitting here during daylight, you would see a lot of post oak leaves on the ground, which is always just a reminder of, wow, it's happening soon.
There's been a lot of things that have really kind of turned in the last week or so that I'm like, ooh, some of the sycamores are really starting to turn.
Yeah, I saw an American, what was that? American black gum on the farm completely marooned out, and was just like, Now, I think it was probably a little stress-induced because of the drought, but at the same time, it was like, whoa, that's
those
usually one of
the
first ones.
Early goers.
It's like, wow, that's awesome. So
that's neat.
Go cut that thing down.
Yeah, well, it's
time. Sprout.
It's definitely time for this stuff to start turning over. But I'm excited to go and hunt. And we had this conversation earlier. Not terribly excited about, like, hunting in the heat. Like, there's something always just iconic about late October, early November hunts that, like, I don't think you can ever really replace. But just, it's almost like a knowing that you now have the option to be able to go out and hunt if you do so choose, that I think is the exciting part. But it is here. And I just have, like, this, a little bit of an anticipation because I feel like it's going to be a good year. I feel like it's going to be a successful year for us, but Seth, Chad, Kyle, Frank, anybody else right here kind of in the Land of Legacy crew, team member deal, I think it's just going to be overall a fun year.
Yeah. Well, like we talked last week, Oklahoma and then many farms here in Missouri that we're hunting. We may throw in a public land trip at some point during the fall. Just a lot of, you know, there's a lot of good deer on camera. A lot of food plots. We finally getting rain this year, so
yeah.
Food plots looking great. And that, I guess, is a segue right into this week's highlighting of the partner that makes this podcast happen is Stratton Seed. Go strattonseed.com. We help develop some of their blends, both fall and spring blends, and
I'll say this, Legacy has bolted out of the ground.
Yeah.
Coming on so strong.
Yeah.
In less than a week or so, had good rain, and it's coming.
It's
popped, man.
And I would say, guys, we love Stratton Seed. We love the Legacy blend. Most importantly, quality seed, but we love the pricing.
Yes.
So you guys are all out there. It's a great time because you can go and look at any Facebook group. What is that? Poor Man No-Till Food Plots is one.
Yeah, something like that.
Habitat Manager is another one. There's
food
all
plot
kinds of food plot junkies. And everybody is sharing seed labels. And you'll see the bottom seed label. And so it gives you a good idea what's in these blends. Because you can have fancy marketing, but those seed labels tell you what's in there.
Composition, germination,
and you can start
variety.
Comparing them and realize real quick, I think, and very unbiased, hopefully, can say, I think you'll realize pretty quick that Stratton seed prices are hard to beat. I'd be shocked. I would love to know if there is a person out there that says, nope, I got a blend that can beat Legacy blend pricing. Share it with me. So there'll be some. Figure out a way that we can beat it.
That can beat the pricing, but not stack up with all the varieties.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not going to have the same offering. 12
species blend with a couple different annual clovers and all that. You can throw a 4 blend in there and say, oh, yeah, it beats you. But a 12 blend.
It doesn't stack
be
up.
Be hard. Be very hard. So go strattonseed.com.
So this week, we might almost, like I say, get unruly. But I feel like there's just, as we're getting into season, there's some points that just need to overall be made about, if you will, expectations. Like, you know, when you go, you spend time all over the country and you see on social media this and that, like, there's probably every year, let's just break down this a state into 4 different regions. I don't care what the shape of the state is, whatever, just say 4 different regions. There are going to be, in every region throughout the hunting season, big deer killed in, like, every corner of the states that have whitetails in them, right?
Yeah.
By default, there's going to be some deer who get to age, and they're going to be good deer.
Yep.
I feel like we forget that. And I feel like a lot of times we're so hung up on the points about what makes a big buck, and really just forget about the root cause of it and how we can influence it. Of course, there's hundreds of variables that go into all of this, right? But when it comes down to it, there's things that you can control and there's things that you can't control. Obviously, we all have to abide by the state, the legal means to hunt, right? Yep. You can't go outside that. Then you'd be breaking the laws. But, like, there's some states that allow for different regulations that help reduce, I think, obviously the number of bucks harvested or the accessibility to hunters. Therefore, just generally speaking, they have a better age structure into a herd, right? Yeah,
Iowa is that.
Yeah, Kansas is kind of one of those.
Kentucky.
Kentucky, Ohio is one. Those are all one buck states.
Yep.
So it just automatically, those states lend themselves to a hunter observing and, if you will, forcibly kind of putting themselves in a position where they need to make a decision of shoot or pass, because you could, I think Kentucky actually opened up today, and it's like you could literally end your season today, but most people don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Like, they want to experience a lot of things, unless it's a, I don't want to say once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, but something that doesn't come around too often, right? A good deer comes out, and you're like, yeah, I'd blow the rest of the season here in the state for that deer. But it makes people decide.
Yeah. If you've got multiple tags, doesn't matter.
You're weighted much differently in those decisions, yeah, right?
He may show up, I'll get him on a second tag.
Right. Right. Yeah. And so, like, just automatically, like, there's a variable that gets thrown out because of the state regulations. Again, you can't do anything about them. There's bigger deer there. But resource-wise, is Kentucky that much different than Tennessee?
Nope.
Is Kentucky that much different from many portions, honestly, of Missouri?
Indiana.
Yeah.
Parts of Illinois.
Parts of Ohio.
Compare, just look at two catty corner states. You've got Iowa and you've got Kansas. But then the two others, Nebraska and Missouri, nobody talks about them nearly as much as they talk about those two, because you have multiple bucks. You have a rifle season during the rut.
Yep.
It's just like over-the-counter tags.
Not
everything, but for the most part, just those few items drastically change the overall deer herd.
Yes, and it's shaped by the opportunity or the percentage of deer that can get to an older age class. It's not that Nebraska, although it looks different than Missouri in many places, that it doesn't have the opportunity to harvest big deer, because I promise you, there are many portions of the state have got giant whitetails.
Yeah,
giant.
And it does, but it doesn't. It's not that different from Kansas. I mean, it
Correct.
Sits right next to each other.
It's Arkansas and Mississippi. There are portions of both of those states where you can go and successfully kill big deer.
Yeah,
right there in the Mississippi deltas, even in much of the ag country and in the hills of both of those states, you can kill really big deer. But are you going to be encountering them at the same rate as you would in Iowa or Kansas? Well, probably not.
Nope.
Because of, again, general regulations. But in essence, it's the age structure. But I think that oftentimes people want to go back to revert into, let's say, my area doesn't have the genetics. And I'm like,
oh, yeah.
You can't even say that. That's not even a valid argument if you don't have an age structure that honestly would represent what a genetic potential would even be. Like, if you have less individuals in a population that are of 5.5 and older, your sample size of what a genetic potential, I'm air quoting that, genetic potential in that region would be, is so, so small.
Yeah.
But compare that to another state that, again, has a balanced age structure. Well, now we're looking at something that says, okay, we might have a slightly better indication of what the genetics are in an area. Anyhow, that's a whole nother discussion.
Yeah.
The whole thing is, it doesn't matter what your genetics are, what your food plots look like, this and that. If you're wanting...
What mineral you're dumping on the ground.
I was going to get into products, yes. But what mineral you're dumping on the ground, it doesn't matter all that. If you're listening to this podcast and you want to shoot bigger deer, you probably need older deer on the landscape. The things that follow into place afterwards, I think that have an impact. I don't know, let's say how measurable, but things like really, really ramping up the habitat. Because there's so many places right now, let's just take a block of really poor habitat. We've seen this where there's very, like, probably, let's just say zero land management, but a deer gets to 5.5, he gets shot, and he's still a 160. He's still a nice, nice deer. That happens a lot in poor habitat. But a lot of people would say, wow, okay, that's a nice deer. I would love to be able to shoot a 160-inch deer, but that's just a product of his age in his region. But what happens then if you apply the habitat to it? Well, now we're getting somewhere. Now we're really ramping things up. But I just don't think that we can simplify things down to it really more than, hey, if you want to shoot bigger deer, as you're entering into your hunting season, if you want to shoot bigger deer, you got to shoot older deer. Or you have to pass younger deer for them to get to older deer.
If your goal is bigger deer, score-wise,
yeah,
body-wise, you're like, I want bigger deer. And who knows? If you haven't heard it by now, let's just clear it up. Age number one, nutrition number two, genetics number three.
Correct. Order of importance. Those are all factors that express help dictate antlers. But right, that's order of importance.
Age number one being most importantly. If a young buck that gets shot isn't going to be a booner ever, not today, not tomorrow, not next year, he just can't be any bigger when he's dead. Nutrition being number two. Most important, you have to have quality forage year-round. Lower stress levels. Lower the stress levels, the better chance they're going to express more of their potential, express more of their health. And number three, genetics. We can't control it.
We can't even see it.
It's a moving target. Unless you're managing acres and acres and acres and acres and acres, then you might, but most of us are not.
No.
I mean, we kind of laugh and say, my does are raising
other
my neighbor's bucks.
Yeah,
because the
absolutely.
Way it works to avoid inbreeding is when
dispersion.
They get dispersed out, and there's just no way to say that what I'm raising on my farm, I've got this doe, she dropped a button buck, or she dropped a little buck, and that deer right there is going to be my next Boone and Crockett. Well, he might make it to Boone and Crockett, but you probably won't get a shot at him.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the other thing. If you hear, that's that one's brother. That's the dad, or they're twins. Probably not.
Yeah.
Like, they probably moved and just went separate way. Like, that's why we don't have, like I said, this inbreeding of animals unless a population gets isolated. You don't have those situations. It happens naturally. We just don't even see it because when they're dispersing, it's usually the spring after they're a year old bucks, and they're barely growing antlers, and they're just covering ground. But we see this through GPS collars and these massive movements depending on the landscape. But that also dictates things too. But I think, you know, some people are just asking themselves in their specific region, why am I not seeing big deer? Like, I got cameras out 24/7. I've got feed, I've got food plots, I got this. Well, honestly, they're probably not there because your age structure in not your property necessarily, but let's take the whole neighborhood. The neighborhood is probably just really low. It's just very heavily skewed to the year and a half and 2.5 year old deer. Sure, you're gonna have a couple 3.5s get through, but are you really getting to the 4s and 5s? probably not. Now, that's based on, again, maybe some state regulations, based on hunting pressure in that neighborhood. But we cannot sit here and just blame and say, well, I'm just going to shoot this because that's all I got. If your goal is to shoot big deer, the number one thing for you to do is not shoot younger deer. And I'm not saying, and I know you're going to say the same thing, we're not saying that it's wrong to shoot younger deer. We're simply saying if you, as an individual, if your goal is to shoot bigger deer, you can't shoot them at 2 and 3. Period. It doesn't work.
No.
You're the person, or you're that neighbor, whatever the situation is, that everyone's like, well, yeah, they don't have big deer here because they all get shot when they're younger.
Yeah.
Well,
I grew up in still live here in the Ozarks, and it's always been, they just don't get as big as they do up north.
False.
And it's just like, it's because of that mindset right there that keeps us from having. Now, we can make an argument over the fact that there's more food available in northern Missouri than there is in the Ozarks, which is generally closed canopy forest.
Mm-hmm.
But if it was the same, if there was quality forage, year-round forage, here and there, there's no reason that the deer are going to have a drastic difference in the overall size. A lot of the deer in northern Missouri were restocked with southern Missouri deer.
Correct.
When game populations were horrible, they trapped them here in the Ozarks and they sent them north. So, genetically speaking, they're the same deer. For the most part. Nutrition's a little different, but the overall mindset is one of the biggest factors that plays into northern Missouri having bigger deer than southern Missouri. It's because southern Missouri, we live by the idea that they're never going to be that big. Fork and Horns probably, or an 8-pointer, I'll go ahead and shoot him because he's not going to be that much bigger anyway.
I grew up in north central Virginia, and there's a lot of hunters around, but so many people were still, you know, of the same mindset. Big deer, you had to go to Ohio. You had to go to Kentucky. Basically, you had to cross the Appalachian Mountains to get into where the big deer lived.
If you were to stay in Virginia, where would you go to kill big deer?
I would go to South Central. Or southeastern Virginia.
Wow, if you had to think about it, there's not really...
No, honestly, because it's a tougher question, because there's big deer across the whole state.
Yeah.
But if I was to, probability-wise,
yeah.
South Central, Southeast. Southeast yes. Probably first. And people were like, what? Southeast? Sandy, piney. Yeah, well, there's tons of cutover, tons of swamps, and tons of... soybeans and peanuts.
When you said cutovers and swamps, I heard the potential for deer to get old.
Absolutely.
And then you say the crops, plenty of forage.
It's a perfect combination,
mm-hmm.
honestly. I mean, it's...
Can you run dogs over there?
Yeah.
Oh.
100%.
Fun.
And then it's rifle season from November 16th till the first Saturday in January, and you can kill 3 bucks. So it's... Let's just say some odds are stacked against the general herd from an age structure development standpoint.
Yeah.
There's a lot of liberties given. Now, I love opportunity from hunting standpoints and the ability for people to access game. Love that. Don't ever want to take it away. So we're talking specifically to this on this podcast, again, to individuals on their property. If you were wanting to do this, this is what you would need to do. But, yeah, there's a lot of things stacked against. However, every single year there are 170, 80-inch deer killed out of southeast Virginia. I mean, multiple every single year. They're there. The recipe, the habitat, allows them to be able to get of a, a size that anybody or any portion of the country could produce.
Yeah.
There's just not that many.
Here in Missouri, what I see in comparing the state, and I'm sorry about the people in West Missouri or Eastern Missouri, because I'm just going to split it with North and South.
Yeah.
Southeast is totally different than South Central and Southwest.
Yes.
But you're getting lumped into the South. To me, when I look at the difference, I say there's two main things that really come into play. The fact that people in the South don't believe that we can have the quality of deer in the North. And so that is a big problem. But what I see, the biggest difference is overall land use and therefore land price per acre. Much more expensive in Northern Missouri, much cheaper in Southern Missouri. And if you can flip it and get actually that mindset of saying, we can do this in Southern Missouri, you have a lot more potential. For a landowner or a guy wanting to buy a chunk of ground, I think in Southern Missouri you have a much better chance at doing it if you can actually implement the quality of work to improve the overall habitat than you can in Northern Missouri. Because you can get a bigger piece in Southern Missouri, and then you can manage it to where that food is more year-round. And so I think you'd have an overall better chance. But you have to change your perspective of understanding that you can grow them in Southern Missouri. And it's just like any other state we visit or talk to, is the overall change in the perspective and understanding that you can grow big deer. I just have to stop shooting them when they're so small.
Yeah. I know I've gotten the question, I'm sure you have as well, from people who are looking to hire us and say, hey, I'm in this region. What do you think my honest potential is?
Yeah.
Honestly, I have no idea.
Yeah.
I know it's going to be really good, and it would exceed your expectation if I threw out like an inches that a deer could get here if you implemented this plan and created this.
Yeah.
It'd probably scare you.
In my head,
there's not a ceiling right now.
No, I think when people ask the question, do you think I can grow big deer in this region? I mean, just fill in the blank. In my head, I kind of chuckle. In my head, and I don't always say this, but it's like, well, that depends on how much work you're willing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And how good you're going to manage your trigger finger. Because if your goal is big deer, you have to manage your trigger finger just as much as you manage your habitat.
And here's the meat and potatoes of the podcast. If you're looking to kill big deer, this is the cheapest thing that you can do. It's just pass deer.
Yep.
Or
pass young bucks.
Yeah. Okay, so that's what I was getting into.
Yeah.
Pass young bucks and hammer down on some does.
Yep.
If you have a high deer density.
Yeah.
That situation, I mean, we're not talking, there's not a tractor involved, there's not planting equipment, there's not herbicide, there's not chainsaws, and I love all of that. And that's let's say stage two. But if all you're looking to do is get a better age structure in your herd, in your neighborhood, it's either sit back and don't kill that 2-3-year-old buck and just switch to does. And if you're wanting to kill deer, then kill does.
Yeah. If you have a bloodthirst to just fill tags, shoot does.
Absolutely.
So how many times do you run across a property or you hear the story of the landowner who's really wanting to grow big deer? Because I think if you were to poll us and we were all honest, the dream, the vision, the daydream that we have in the tree stand, we picture a big buck. For whatever region you're in, you picture the peak of the quality for that region. So most of us want a trophy deer. Whether we'll admit it or not, that's a big goal. And then, but we let that overshadow the importance of managing the herd. We talked about that a couple podcasts back, but we have that goal of a big deer, but we also have a goal of filling tags, and sometimes they blur together to where we shoot young bucks because we want to kill and we don't want to shoot a bunch of does. Because somebody probably told us, well, you can't shoot all the does because that's the mama to those big bucks. Another myth. Myth. When was that podcast we did? Common myths of...
I don't know. A long time ago, probably.
You realize we're over 260 podcasts now.
Yeah. Hard to go back. I know we've covered a ton of topics, and we've hit on this in different podcasts, but haven't just devoted it fully and just said, hey, this is the recipe. If this is what you want to do, if this is your goal for your property, you got to lay off of the young deer. And the other thing that goes hand in hand, we'll get into this in a little bit, is you got to stop playing the blame game on the neighbor and extend the hand out across there and start a wildlife co-op. I mean, it has to happen. You have to have a neighborhood effect to make this work in most regions. But regardless, I think that everyone, like Missouri here, is a 2-buck state. Virginia was a 3-buck state. And I think Tennessee is a 2-buck. Indiana, I think, is a 2-buck. Illinois, same thing. But I will say this, when you have multiple tags, it's not an obligation to fill them. You know what I mean? Like, if you have...
That's
if
turkey you have, season podcast right there.
If you have goals of getting to, again, managing an age structure, and you have extra tags in your pocket when it comes to antler deer, you're probably not at a situation in your region, in your neighborhood, that you should be selecting to harvest a second deer.
Yes.
In most situations. And in some places, honestly, you probably should go a couple years without tagging one, period.
Yep.
Because you have to let that age structure mature into having those age classes that will produce big bucks represented on the landscape. It's just, like, I guess it was Mike Chamberlain used the phrase turkeys, you know, death by a thousand cuts, right? There's so many things that want to kill them, this and that. But I think, honestly, you could apply maybe death by 500 cuts to mature deer.
Yeah.
Like, it takes a special 5-6 years for that individual to be able to get to a point where he is at that age.
Yeah.
All the things that occur, vehicle collisions, disease, injury, obviously hunters, harvesting, it takes a lot. But
yes,
he's not going to get giant and big if he's 2.
No.
It's not going to happen.
No. When the story of Donuts is complete, whether he shows back up or we never see him again, and there's a time frame to go, okay, we're ready to accept that he is dead from reasons we don't know how.
Right.
We'll share more about the growth cycles of Donuts.
Sure.
And how eye-opening that was for us. You hit it where I think a lot of people can think about it or understand it better, but when it comes to the just the overall thinking about a deer getting bigger, there's so many factors that come into play that we don't even we think about car collisions, we think about hunter mortality, but there's so many other things, disease or just coyotes,
predation.
Or just the use a different part of his range and never to be seen again. There's so many things that come into play that we never really, I don't know what the percentage would be because it varies so much in each place, but the percentage to go from a button buck to a mature buck that we all say, wow, that's a shooter, 5.5 is very, very slim. And, it gets even harder in areas where there's high deer densities or high hunter numbers,
yes.
Which, and then we talked about dogs even too. If you throw in the different types of hunting scenarios,
the seasons dictate a lot of it.
Yeah.
And, but here's the thing. again. If, like, a state builds parameters around hunting regulations. Let's say, just go back to the tag situation. Let's say they give you $3 or $2. That doesn't mean you have to fill all those tags. And same thing with a season when it comes to, like, rifle season. Let's say you have an extended rifle season.
Yeah.
You don't have to hunt with a rifle during that time. You so can choose to, and there's nothing wrong with doing that at all. Nothing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But, or maybe you just, you don't hunt it. And maybe you just say, hey, I'm going to reduce some pressure. Basically, I'm just overall saying, we're just throwing out a bunch of different scenarios to say that.
And
you, those are like guidelines.
Yeah.
And they're rules and laws, of course, but they're also guidelines. Like, you can also I don't want to say the right phrase is less than those. Like, you don't have to give yourself all of the distance and the range that the rifle would do. Maybe you just say, hey, I'm just gonna say I'm gonna take the rifle out one time this year, and I'm gonna give myself that advantage.
Yep.
You can reduce some advantages on you personally, but you have to make that decision within the given state guidelines and rules and regulations that you have to follow.
Well, we use state guidelines a lot of times as like our goals of going, okay, this is what they take, this is what they're basically writing up. Is that fireworks going on back there? They're basically writing up the guidelines and putting the bar here.
Yes.
And then as a young hunter, we say, I got to raise the bar, or I got to get to the bar.
Yeah, I have to
get
to the bar.
And so I got to kill $2, I got to kill 2 does, mm-hmm. I got to shoot my 2 fall turkeys, and then I'll know the season's complete.
If I bought these tags, I might as well fill them.
Yes.
I think that there is obviously, we all talk about the stages, the maturity of, you know, hunters and stuff like that. That stage is typically, young, bloodthirsty, but we don't have to enter into that and continue those things within state guidelines.
One thing that we talked about it a lot this past turkey season was, you know, turkey numbers are declining, populations aren't as high. So we said, you know, even if your state has 2 tags, you get two tags, doesn't mean you have to fill both of them.
Mm-hmm.
You yourself have to figure out what you look at and what is your compass for a successful season. And I think I had this conversation, well, you and I, we were part of a conference call, and I used this scenario as just as much as we are habitat and land consultants and help landowners have their land express more of its potential and become a healthier landscape, we really change a perspective too for guys to say, when we hear this so much, it's just become repetitive now that our clients say, you know, I really am excited for deer season, but I'm more looking forward to January, February, March when I can do work.
Mm-hmm.
And you start seeing this change into where they may not be like filling as many tags as they once were because they're not focused on filling tags. They're focused on overall assessing the habitat and saying, okay, well, I'm on the stand, I need to do this and this and this and this. And before you know it, 2 years post plan, they're still killing good deer, or they're killing even better deer.
Yeah.
But overall, it doesn't matter if they fill tags or not. They're enjoying the season. They're enjoying the process. And we're changing a perspective of saying, hey, you are not your level of success, your definition of success is not a filled tag on a 200-inch buck or 150-inch buck. You change it where I want to see the change in the habitat. I want to see the process. I want to see more wildlife using. And then in the process of that, you do start seeing bigger deer.
Yeah, it's almost like, I feel like some people probably and some probably who either choose to not hire us and have hired other consultants, which is fantastic, it's great. But they're probably like, no, they don't get it. Like, I want to shoot big deer. I want to shoot, that is my goal. And it's like, I totally get that. But if you focus on the habitat, those opportunities will 100% present themselves. Like, it's just I don't come at land management strictly focusing on the one single event that is your goal. I look and say, hey, your goal is this, but we have to do all these other things and focus on them, and this will come true in the end. But there's so many other factors. And I guess, and we're 100% guilty of it. I think we opened up the podcast with it. It's like hunting season is coming.
Yeah.
It's here. But I think that from a perspective standpoint, what if we just didn't call it hunting season? And this is just obviously very dramatic, and I'm not serious. But truthfully, it's herd management season. Like, we go from, you know, January through September time frame in, like, land management mode. But, like, when it's hunting season, you're still the manager. You're still the land owner. You're still the land manager. You have access to this property. It is just herd management season. And sometimes herd management season, depending on the season of the property, the maturity level of the age structure, it might be I don't do anything. Or it might be I just need to focus on does and increase. And if I have a buck come in during the rut that I don't know, I'll go hunt that opportunity. But if I don't have a mature buck on the property right now, you can't go and hunt a buck that's not there. So, again, that herd management season is going to mean different things for different people, but it's not just hunting season if you have a very specific goal of managing for, certainly in areas that are not known for producing these giant big deer, right?
Yep.
You have a responsibility to take and understand the general herd in the neighborhood versus what's just right in front of you at an opportune time to harvest it.
Yeah, January through September, land management, September through January, herd management.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds simple because it is.
It won't ever catch on, so don't plan on it. But,
right.
That's really what it comes down to. Okay, if I really, you know, I don't know how far along in this podcast we are, but we'll probably have to wrap up at some point. But if we're really going to break this down and simplify it, it really comes down to maximize your habitat. Because we've all accepted now that we only care about big deer, right? or our goal is we want the biggest bucks we can have in the neighborhood. We want to put the feather in our cap and say, we grow bigger bucks in most of our neighborhood, or than
the rest
surrounding
of the
area.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if that's the goal, then we're going to stop shooting them when they're young. We're going to improve the habitat to where there's food year round. Doesn't matter what month we go out there and assess, there's food available, whether it be woody browse, herbaceous plants. There's quality cover to where they still can survive foreign or not two-legged predators, but all the other four-legged predators that are out there. And then I need to make sure I don't have too many does. And so I need to improve the habitat so much so that I've given them the very best food and cover I can for all the months of the year, and I need to make sure that there's not a pile of other deer there competing with them causing social stress.
Yes. Yes, 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 and more yes. There is, it just is a responsibility for everybody, I feel like, to understand what that herd looks like. And I don't think that you can just haphazardly run trail cameras and have a good idea. You can't just say, okay, this is all I got, because I've had cameras out, that this is what I deal with, this is what I got. Like, it is more data driven than just observations of scrolling through trail camera pictures and pulling cards on a Saturday afternoon. It takes more responsibility to do that. But guess what? So does completing TSI, and so does completing or calibrating the drill. It takes a little extra effort to be able to understand what it is you're working with. So then at the end of the day, your results are what you want.
Yeah.
You can't go and plant a food plot and just say, oh, well, I haven't changed the drill settings from, you know, when I planted soybeans, but I'm just going to go over here and just do wheat and just, it'll turn out how it is.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like a lot of people are probably like entering into deer season in the same manner and saying, well, I probably should shoot does three's going to do it? When in all reality, it probably should be 12.
Yeah.
Like, how are you quantifying that information? And there's ways to do it, and ways to do it pretty dang accurately. But those steps to take those, it requires some extra effort.
Yeah.
I think the other aspect of this, someone's going to say, okay, guys, I get it. QDM is founded on, you know, principles of letting deer get to older age. I feel like somehow we've, like, I don't know, skipped over that a little bit or just forgotten, like, hey, that is, like, principle uno. Like, that's really important, because we got so inundated with products and this and that and score and whatever. But really, there is the question that becomes, hey, I don't think you guys quite understand. Like, I've got a ton of neighbors at home. I'm just in an area that's got lots and lots of hunting pressure. So from, if you're in that situation, obviously a wildlife co-op is a great thing to try and introduce and get on board with, right? But number two, from a habitat standpoint, is if you're trying to play, if your goal, let's say, and you have tons of hunters around, I'm putting this on a stinking tee for you. Tons of hunters around, you got a pretty decent chunk of land, and you're just wanting to get more deer to older age, and you say, hey, I'm not gonna be shooting, you know, bucks this year, but what would you want your habitat to be like to provide that growing maturity atmosphere in the neighborhood? Like, well, what would you have on the property, or what would your focus be?
If you're looking at it from a standpoint of going that the biggest erosion you're going to have in a deer herd over the course of the year is neighboring neighbor gunfire, then I'm going to maximize the secure cover for that time frame. So I'm not looking at it going, well, I need better food plots than my neighbor, because if that's the case, then I'm rolling the dice on where that deer is selecting the best cover to be to survive, and that's too risky, because you got to understand that what is a deer doing during daylight for the most of the time?
Bedded down in cover.
He's bedded down in cover, or what he believes is the best secure cover.
Yeah.
And if I don't make it black and white blatant to him on what is the best cover, then I'm letting him just pick and choose, and he may not pick the best.
Correct.
And so,
or he may not pick your side of
so
the fence.
Many times, I mean, you can just humor me and get on social media and type in any kind of habitat forum and say, okay, how what's the ratio of talks on food plot, talks on mineral, talks on product versus quality cover? Not a very good ratio.
Fractional?
And so
10% at most.
If your goal is, we've had this question multiple times get emailed in lately. Okay, how do I hold more deer? There's a couple good deer on camera, and they seem to maybe want to be, I'm not getting them on camera as much anymore. How can I hold more deer on the farm? Well, my Chad just told me one, a guy asked him, he's like, I've got mineral and food plots out. Well, you missed the big picture, because you need quality cover.
You're looking at an empty picture with a frame.
Yeah.
That's it.
You got to have quality cover. And so many times, we hear from our clients, once they do the bedding thickets, they're like, deer all over. I'm seeing more deer. It's like, well, yeah, that's why we recommend it more than any other thing that we probably do.
It's one of the easiest things to implement. It's the first thing you should do if you don't have cover on a place.
Yeah.
Go and cut some daggum timber.
Not only is it healthy for the forest,
yeah,
but it's healthy to the overall land. We add some diversity to the growth structure.
Yeah.
But also it makes it pretty doggone easier hunting, because now we know where they want to bed, because it is the best bedding.
It is without a doubt the best bedding. And I think that category, if you will, if you're sitting back and saying, okay, I've got neighbors at hunt, and I want to supply something or offer something to the neighborhood deer herd that other places don't have or aren't doing well, generally speaking, it can fall right into that cover category, and you can knock it out of the park and do it pretty easily. And I think And sometimes in some situations you make money while doing it. So either you're letting deer walk, so that's free, that doesn't cost you money, or you're killing some does, so you're out maybe a processing fee if you don't do that yourself, and the price of ammo, so very little investment there, and you're getting...
It depends on what ammo.
Yeah, or how good of a shot you are.
Yeah.
But, so that there's a scenario where you, okay, I helped get more deer to maturity, but then also, from a cover standpoint, I cut timber and I made money on it. Those are situations right there where we come at it and say, this, the game is simple. And the game is honestly looking you square in your face and saying, hey, over here, this is one of the easiest things to do and implement, and you haven't done it because you're focused on, oh, if I put money or if I invest money into the farm through food plots, which cost a lot of money, I'll get that return. Well, deer don't care how much you spent on it.
Yeah.
What they care about is this quality cover.
Yeah.
And can I stay here, bed here safely and securely?
Yeah.
That's what they're going to relate to, not how much you spent on a food plot or how much fertilizer you put down on it. It is a different game. And again, boiling it back down to, if your goal is big bucks, age structure and cover will get you there.
Yeah.
In whatever region you find yourself listening to this podcast in.
If you listen to this podcast, you need to think. I want you to picture a calendar, a 12-month calendar, a calendar year, and say, okay, when did I spend the most time on my farm? If you spent the most time on your farm, and I'm not talking hunting, or I guess you can talk hunting, because if you spend more time on your farm during hunting season than any other time of the year, you're drastically missing out on the success and the potential of your property.
You're going to improve it minimally.
Yeah. You're basically a sports player just going to games and playing. You realize
you
that
up the practice.
You're not at practice. We're talking about practice. We're talking about practice. And if you also then look at the calendar year and you realize that you spend more time, okay, outside of the hunting season in August or July and August, going and refreshing mineral or feeders and all that stuff, you're missing it. You're scratching the surface on the potential of your farm. Or you're putting out mock scrapes, or you're putting out water tanks, or you're doing all the stuff, you're putting in food plots. You're missing the big part of it. But if you're one of those guys that realize that January, February, March, you're out there sweating it out, cutting, doing all kinds of stuff,
burning,
you get it because you realize the impact that makes. Although it may not seem like a lot because you're months out from getting to see it, it's not that instant, hey, I went and planted a food plot. 2 weeks later, I've got a green area. Deer coming in. I'm getting them on trail camera. Yeah, that's great. But it's just scratching the surface.
It's like, and I think this, I don't know, I'm going to probably butcher the phrase, but basically it's like, if it's that easy, like everyone would be doing it, or it's like, if that yielded you the result that you wanted to, like everyone would be in the same boat. What I'm saying is like, if just putting out mineral and a trail camera grew giant deer, we wouldn't be having
this
podcast.
We'd know it by now, right?
Yeah, we wouldn't be having this podcast of saying, hey, you said you want bigger deer. Well, you're doing that right now as your practice, and it's not getting you the result.
Yeah.
Do me a favor then and try something different, but try something that's going to make that difference. It's not going to allow you to go and show up to a property on a Saturday morning, put out the mineral, and then place the trail camera over, and then that evening have pictures of some deer. That's instant gratification. That's what we're dealing with here is the desire of saying, hey, I'm going to put a little time in, I'm going to get the pictures I want, I'm going to get out of there, and I'm going to complain about the pictures that I get.
Yeah.
That's not land management. Land management is right. Getting out there, January, February, March, cutting, burning, doing that stuff, and then seeing it pay off 2 years later.
Yeah.
Or maybe that next fall.
Maybe even that next
fall.
Yeah.
But we can't just allow that desire for instant gratification to then result in, again, the stated goal of having bigger deer on a landscape. It doesn't work like that.
Yep. Bigger deer have
big deer plus marketing equals chaos.
Lackluster result.
Chaos.
Yeah.
Big deer plus quality habitat, or I should say quality habitat plus
developed age structure.
Herd.
Let's just say
land understanding or land education equals big deer.
Yeah. Well, that's a part of the write-up was like, this isn't a product game. This is an education and an application standpoint. Yeah. Like, you have to know what it is you're managing for and then know how to manage. Like, you can't manage a whitetail if you don't know a whitetail. Like, you can't raise successfully. You can't be basically a poultry producer or a pig producer on a farm if you don't know the first thing about them or what they need on a 365-day deal. Like, you're going to fail.
Yeah.
And I don't see farmers putting out just salt block for pigs and saying, well, I'll sell you in a few months and I'll take my check and get out of here.
Yeah.
It would work like that.
Yeah. Michael Jordan made a killing off with the basketball. And we could buy that same basketball. But it's the knowledge that he had, the ability to use that knowledge to be successful. And so many times we go out thinking we can buy the same product as XYZ, Tom, Dick, or Harry that kills big deer and say, it's going to happen. I'm going to shake this bag up and I'm going to dump it out.
I'm going to put it on the ground. I'm going to put it on the stump.
Yeah. And then, voila, big deer show up. It does not work like that. And Tom, Dick, or Harry may be killing good deer because something's happening on his property that he doesn't even realize there's a reason.
Yeah.
It could be a tornado damage or a logging operation came through.
Yeah.
Or just the natural
layout structure
of the farm.
Absolutely.
And he can't put his finger on it. But there's a reason why big deer can be killed in same farms year after year, and it's because there's something going on, whether we know it or not. And if you want that to happen on your farm, you just got to follow the simple results of going quality habitat, manage the herd, stop shooting them when they're young, and overall, just make a landscape that deer want to be there. And that happens by quality habitat.
Yeah. And
it's really not that hard. It's not.
Actively manipulating it.
You can buy your way by hiring people, or you can work your way.
Yeah.
Anybody can do it.
Absolutely. Anybody with land, and I get this question too, it's like not only like the region, I'm in this region, do you think that I can, you know, improve things? Probably. Absolutely. I haven't been to a property yet that was like, well, all good. You've got it all down already. No. Like, of course there's you can improve things. And then it's like, well, am I going to shoot big deer? Too many variables, but I guarantee you this.
If you don't screw it up, maybe.
if you follow this, you'll be a heck of a lot closer to doing it. I can't be there and make you aim right or whatever, but I'll do the I'll make the statement. You'll produce and create a landscape that is going to be most likely way more desirable than your neighbors, therefore increasing your chances of killing them.
You know, I'm going to use we talk about a lot about quail and how they key in on quality habitat more than white-tailed deer.
Yeah.
I just saw something shared this week out of the state of Iowa, which we work a lot.
Yep.
And did you see this? Uh-uh. They were talking about the pheasant density in it was pheasants, gray partridge, bobwhite quail, cottontail rabbit.
Okay.
And one of our projects, they pheasants are very, very low, like not many, declining like 5 to 11%. Ironically, the project that we work is loaded up with pheasants because we have quality habitat.
Yep.
And what do you think? The same thing's happening. The landowner is killing some deer
stallions
that most of us can ever only even dream of.
Literally. dream of.
many inches above 200 in a couple cases. And so it's like, hello, it's not that hard. We made quality habitat, and we see animals that key in on quality habitat more than a white-tailed deer. They're thriving.
Thriving. Populations are increasing where everywhere else around you is decreasing.
Work with other landowners just down the road and say they haven't seen them since the 90s.
Yeah.
And they're saying, oh, we're seeing over 30 just mowing the trails.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, and they're like, 5 years ago, wasn't seeing it. Well, yeah, because now we have old field, prairie restoration, mm-hmm. young forest. We got everything going on around here. And the pheasants are indicating it. Quail are indicating it. And certainly the deer size is indicating it.
And turkey
quality
numbers.
Habitat, I don't care what. If you could, if we could devote the next 10 years of our career to figure out a way to box up quality habitat and sell it and put a buck on the box, we'd retire.
Maybe we'll just get one of those big, like, refrigerator boxes, and then we'll just get shipped around. And we'll just come out of them like a
That'd
present.
That'd be a bad birthday present.
Yeah, it would.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, you know, like.
But here's the thing. It's not that hard. Depending on how much you want to work, depending on how much you want to purchase or hire people. But you could really make that box. You could throw a chainsaw, a drip torch.
Yep.
Some herbicide.
Yep.
Maybe a little bit bigger box and put a four-wheeler with a sprayer on it.
Yeah, yeah. Really, if you had those, like, four things, the world is your oyster. I mean, just, like, crazy.
Yeah.
You can do so much.
And maybe one day we'll buy a 40 acres and we'll just use as few tools as possible and say, we're going to see what
maybe,
we can do.
Yeah, maybe what we should do is just have one single chainsaw, one backpack sprayer, one drip torch.
Yeah, one of those mean green ones from Walmart chainsaws.
No, I will not. I will not do that to myself. And then a bag spreader and four tools. That would be cool.
Yeah.
If anyone wants to donate that 40 acres, let us know.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But, I mean, I think it would probably blow some people's minds what you could create.
Oh, yeah.
And the habitat
to have some trail cameras on it just to showcase.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. But the transformation of that 40 acres would be
And that's
incredible.
The thing. It doesn't even scare me when we say that, which I know it would scare a lot of people. It's like,
I'm excited
you're not going to be
about
able
that.
I'm like, man, if we had 40
let
acres.
Me loose. Let me at him. Let me at him.
Yeah. And that sounds like a property that we may live on one day.
Oh, yeah.
In our little cult.
Yeah.
And it's like,
compound.
Okay, compound, that's a better word for it.
Yeah, I'm not doing the cult stuff, weirdo. Yeah, no.
We go into it and we say, all right, no food plots for 2 years. Let's just see what can happen.
Yep.
It'd be fun because I know there'd be a lot of thickets on that place.
Oh, man. We'd have some sun on the ground, I know that much, and some smoke in the air.
Yeah, for
sure. I mean,
sure.
There's no doubt
about
man.
It. Well,
but, like, real quick before we go. I think to make a comparison to outside of just hunting, there's probably people, if you're a business owner, whatever, you've got mentors that you look up to in a business standpoint. I feel like everyone, like if I've heard this analogy, if you're successful in business, you're constantly evolving, developing, changing, working with things for that business to grow and thrive. But the businesses that are stale, stagnant, don't change with the times,
think they know it all.
Yeah, and just do the bare minimum to get by, let's say, they're not the ones who are having the success and are living financially free and independent. It is the people who are actively working and are diverse in their business as well. And that's essentially an illustration to what it is that we're trying to discuss when it comes to a property. You've got to be diverse. You've got to be manipulating. You've got to be constantly changing things, developing them, and managing them. Stale, stagnant is not attractive to wildlife. And if you haven't done something pretty dang drastic in your habitat or on your land in some time, you're probably looking pretty stale. And so I that's not a recipe that does, that's not a part of the equation that these big deer are produced in annually, yeah, repetitively, consistently, whatever, yeah, you want to say. That's just not part of it.
Yeah, it's a line graph that's either climbing or falling.
Yeah.
And there is no set and go straight parallel.
There's not a plateau, essentially. Yeah. Man, I hope that was helpful. I hope people are just more understanding of the season that we're about to enter. Maybe that land management hat comes off and a scent-free herd management hat comes on. But
yep,
but that's the opportunities that, well, for the next 5 months or so, most people have the ability to have an impact on.
What can you do to change and be the best farm in a great neighborhood from now into the future? We're getting ready to hit hunting season. You can monitor your food plots, put out some utilization cages, and start seeing, figuring out, do I have too many deer for what my habitat can hold? So spend the next 5 months thinning the herd. Listen to these podcasts, yeah, as much as
educate,
I try
yourself,
to just educate yourself. Book us for a consult,
yeah,
or listen to all of our podcasts, watch the videos, and start seeing, okay,
replicate,
I need to change
replicate,
it.
Replicate.
And I think you'll be on the path to doing some amazing things on your farm.
I listened to last
fall's podcast with some of our clients.
Oh yeah,
they'll
we highlighted a lot of success come that December time frame. After a lot of people had success through October and November, and that people are just killing them, and having fun doing it. And I think that's the,
yeah,
most important thing.
Enjoying the process.
Yep.
No longer do you get bummed out, or nearly as bummed out because season closed, because that just goes with the excitement of running a chainsaw.
The bow gets hung up, but the chainsaw gets picked up.
Yeah.
It's just a seamless transition.
Yeah. All right, guys.
Appreciate you listening.
Yeah. Before we go, remember to check out Niangua Coffee.
Coffee's good.
Coffee's good. I looked at you. I was
probably,
like, are you going to say anything?
I could probably use a cup right now.
Check out Niangua Coffee. Man. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Niangua Coffee.
Great friends.
Over there. Even better coffee.
Yep.
It's hard to even imagine. Go check them out. NianguaCoffee.com and order some Blue Spring.
Blackwater
or Fly Down.
Yes.
Maybe a little birdie told me something else maybe coming,
ooh,
soon.
Be checking that out.
Go subscribe to the YouTube channel. We're doing a giveaway.
Yes.
There's going to be virtual property consult that we're donating. There's also going to be some Ryan Kirby artwork thrown,
mm-hmm,
in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be some Land and Legacy apparel, Vortex
gear.
Yep. Did I say Niangua Coffee's thrown in the mix of that?
Not yet.
Yeah, Niangua Coffee's,
ooh,
even in the mix. So,
and
it's going to get better and better. By the time,
awesome,
this is all said and done, you guys in North Dakota might even get a custom Land and Legacy hunting trip in the mix. I told
They're
Matt,
like,
I was going to make a little shameless plug that we'll do some trade. Maybe we'll come in. We'll trade in the bedding thickets. We'll come cut the bedding thickets in.
There's trees in North Dakota?
Places.
Oh, man. No, that'll be fun.
We'll come cut
fun.
The invasives to hunt,
yeah,
North Dakota.
That's right.
I'm sick of seeing all these guys already hunting, and I'm here, and I'm like,
well, here's,
oh, man.
Here's, I'm not sick of sweating in a tree, so,
yep,
that's why it's like, yeah, North Dakota sounds better, because it's like probably up there right now, probably 45 degrees at night. That sounds amazing.
I see those guys in Kentucky and Tennessee, and I'm like,
swatting mosquitoes and just beat it up with sweat by the time they get to the tree. I'm like, nah. I love,
yeah,
deer hunting, but no. I can wait a little bit.
Yeah. There's too much other work to be done anyway.
That is right.
All right, guys. Appreciate you.
We'll catch you next week. Yeah.